Welcome to Embracing Your Season, Raising Littles and Understanding Teens. Here's your host, Paige Klingenpiel.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Embracing Your Season. I'm your host, Paige Klingenpiel. My guest today is author, speaker, and groundbreaking social researcher, Shanti Feldhahn. Shanti received her graduate degree from Harvard University, so you know this woman is smart, as well as a parent herself. So you know she is implementing all the things that she puts in this book, which I know that you'll appreciate. Today, she applies her analytical skills to life-changing truths about relationships, both at home and in the workplace. You can find Shanti's findings that are featured on The Today Show, Family Life, Focus on the Family, The New York Times, and Cosmo. Shanti shares her wisdom around the world. So after you listen to this episode, make sure you go and check out all her resources at shanti.com. Okay, let's get to my interview now. And remember to stay tuned for afterwards when I share some of my takeaways from this awesome interview. Well, Shanti, thanks so much for joining us today. I'm looking forward to having this conversation and even just applying it to my own life. Let's be honest. You were speaking to me directly as I raised three teens and one preteen in my house. So thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. I am delighted.
So I've read a few of your books. I see one in the back right now for women only. But the book I really want to focus on today is for parents only. So let's talk about the kiddos. You have written this awesome book that gives us some tangible, practical things that we can implement. But I want to know, why did you write this book to begin with? What was your passion behind it?
Well, it was actually kind of funny because as we were starting to do some of the research, and I should explain that I'm a social researcher, and so I can't help myself.
Yeah, of course.
When I have a question mark over my head, I'm like, that's worth investigating. And we had done one of our other projects with For Women Only and For Men Only. We're helping men and women understand each other. And someone somewhere said, man, I wish I'd known this stuff before I got married. And then we did the teenage research. And as we were doing the teenage research with guys and girls, we're like, whoa, there is a huge application here, not for girls and guys for each other, but for us to them, for the parents to our kids. And we started to see that there was so much just running underneath the surface. There is so much richness, so much going on in their inner life. And so I wanted to figure out what that was. And I wanted to try to investigate and quantify some of that to help us confused parents. So that's the reason for the project.
Well, and now we're going to benefit from this, right? Like, that's what I love about this is that this is research-based, but you're also a mama. Is that correct? So you've probably implemented this?
Absolutely. Well, and the funny part of this is that we were doing this with some co-researchers, co-authors, and when we started this particular project, her kids, they had four teenagers living in their house. And so they were a petri dish, right, for everything yes. we're talking about. When I started originally, you know, before with the very, very first teenage project, my kids were 3 and 6.
Okay.
And so yeah. I'm like, you know what? Oh, these attitudes, that will never happen to me.
Right. Isn't that so funny how we convince ourselves? No, we got it. We're going to handle this so well.
We got it. I know you have those issues in your house.
That is right.
But
yes,
when my kids are teenagers, I am not going to. And
that's
so,
right.
Of course, God has a sense of humor. And so immediately, yes, upon my kids becoming tweens, it's like, oh, there it goes. There's chapter 4. And so, yes, it was absolutely incredibly helpful once I reached that stage myself. And now we've actually moved through that stage. And I have two young adults now, which
is crazy.
Yes.
Which is a totally different thing, which I'm sure you're going to now write an additional book for us as we move from that season from teens to young adults. Yeah, no, that's great. Well, let's dig in.
I've told somebody recently, I'm like, I am highly tempted to do another research project, but we'll see.
Yeah. And that's what I love about this is research-based. I mean, experimental, there's so much value there. I mean, we even talked about that is when we can think we know something, but until we actually are face to face with this teen and the attitude that they bring with them. Like, we don't always know how to then implement this, but research-based, it adds a dynamic that we're able to speak into, even when in our own households. So I love that. So let's dig in. Now, your book talks about 6 findings about the inner lives of children. Okay. So we can't hit up all of them in this session. So I highly encourage everyone that's listening to go and find this book, because it is transformational. It is going to impact your kids in such a beautiful, lovely, healthy way. So let's dig into a couple. And I said this to you offline before we started talking. I was like, so this particular one, like, girl, this is what I was doing last night with my husband and my children. I was like, teens easily give us this negative attitude. This, like, I don't care, I'm angry all the time. And it's like, who is this child? You weren't this way, like, even 2 weeks ago. But you're telling us in this book, there's something deeper there. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about what's really going on?
There is. One of the things that was the most personally helpful for me, right? Because my oldest, you know, is a girl, and that teenage attitude that started at like 11.
That's right. Yep.
And I'm like, what happened to my sweet baby? Right. So I'll tell you, this was actually statistically pretty common. This isn't, by the way, what I'm going to say, it's not universal. I do want you to know that that's one of the reasons we do all these big nationally representative surveys, is we kind of want to know like, what percentage of people does this apply to and not. And so most of this is about like 80%, 20%. Kind of thing. But that means most of the people listening to this will apply to them. And so what we found with the attitudes is that for both guys and girls, those attitudes that make you just want to like scream, those are actually signals of pain. Those are actually signals of insecurity. What you're seeing on the outside is the result of some really deep stuff going on the inside. And some of that are other things that I'd love to talk about here that we covered in the research. But the biggest one is that it actually turns out that it kind of mimics what we found with our research on men and women, which is that it turns out that in the tendency, again, that 80-20 thing, the tendency is that guys and girls tend to have two different sets of primary insecurities running under the surface. And there are different things that are essentially like a raw nerve. Like, to some degree, we're all kind of insecure about everything, right?
Yeah, sure.
But one of the things we found statistically is that what really hits the raw nerve most tends to be different for guys and girls. And those things, when that raw nerve is constantly being hit, it comes out as attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And so let me give you a couple of examples. Okay.
Yes, please.
Because, you know, you ask your teenage son, this happened to us not that long ago, where we asked our teenage son to do something he'd done like 100 times before, take out the trash, you know, and it's like, fine. He slams
right.
the chair.
With the attitude. Yes, of course.
Wait, what? And if I hadn't been aware of this, my head would have exploded and it just would have accelerated it and we wouldn't have gotten anywhere. And so what is behind that? Or you ask your daughter something and she just lips off and you just, you know, want to unload. It's like, what's going on? So it turns out that let me give you, for example, for girls. One of the things that is a really common kind of question in the heart of women in general, but especially teenage girls, is this question of, am I lovable? It's not just, do people love me? It's, am I lovable? Like, am I worthy of being loved for who I am?
Wow.
And it is a underneath the surface that I can't remember what the numbers are right this second, but from one of our studies of teenage girls, I want to say it was like 92% or something. Like, it was a really, really high number.
Wow.
And girls say that they're dealing with this kind of on the inside, this, am I special? Am I lovable? Am I beautiful? Like, all these things about me. And let me tell you that the average school environment today is pretty much designed to make that nerve rubbed raw.
Like, interesting.
Packs of mean girls for the average, you know, seventh grade posse, you know, that is designed to like prick at your nerve of, I must not be special. I must not be lovable. People don't like me. You know, what's wrong with me? Feeling rejected, feeling people talk about you behind your back. Like all of us as parents, as moms, we remember what that was like, right? It's excruciating. And so it's essentially figure a nerve being rubbed raw, okay, over and over and over and over. And then what happens? You come home and you let it out. You let all that pain out in the one place that you inside are secretly hoping that they are going to love you anyway and prove that even when you are unlovable, you are still going to be loved. Because it soothes that feeling that I must not be lovable. You're letting it out in the one place that you're hoping you're going to be affirmed anyway. And it doesn't excuse it. Obviously, we still need to deal with it. But the way we deal with it is completely different once we see it as a sign of pain rather than seeing it as an sort of an uppity attitude. And don't you take that tone with me, young lady. We still have to deal with the disrespect. But man, you deal with it differently once you know this. So that's like on the girl's side. And then on the guy's side, the question that we found with guys, it turns out the nerve, the question that they have in their heart isn't, am I lovable for who I am on the inside? It's, am I able? Am I any good at what I do on the outside? And so, you know, you have like our son, he has learning issues. That time that I'm talking about where we asked him to take out the trash and it was like, fine. And he slammed the chair and we're like, whoa. It turns out he has learning issues. He has a learning disability because he has epilepsy. And so it like messes with things in his brain and he has to work, you know, twice as hard for worse grades, you know, that kind of thing. And he had worked and worked and worked for this one pretty complicated class that was really important actually for him getting into college and getting into the type he wants to be a mechanical engineer, and getting into that type of program is, it's hard, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he had worked and worked and worked, and he had gotten a really bad grade. And it, or I think at the time, he didn't even know his grade. He just knew that it wasn't very good. And he was feeling stupid.
Oh, yeah, sure. Of course.
And he was feeling like, I am no good at what I do on the outside. You know, that I'm a fraud. I'm stupid. And so for a guy, that is their raw nerve. Like, you know, people talk about me behind my back, like the roving packs of mean girls, whatever. Like for them, for a lot of guys, now some guys, yeah, that's painful. But for a lot of guys, it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
But to feel like I've put effort into something and I failed. And that was that raw nerve being pricked. And so again, it's coming out in a place that he hopes he is going to be, and this is all subconscious, right? Mm-hmm, but he's longing to be affirmed.
Wow. So you did mention like the parents' reactivity. So of course, yes, we don't want our kids to be disrespectful, but you're saying for them, this is an outlet. This is a place where they know they can get the love or receive the love. It's a safe place for them. So they're reacting out of their frustration from outside features. But how do we help parents not react then in such a poor way?
That is the question, right? This is one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about people knowing this information. Because even you hearing this right now, it makes us go, oh, like you handle it differently when you know it's a sign of pain. And especially when you know that it's subconscious. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like, oh, I am going to slam the chair in the hope that I am affirmed. Like that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
This is all subconscious. And yet that's actually what's going on. There is this longing for a guy. It's often a longing for affirmation of what they do, that they measure up, that they have what it takes, that you believe in them, that you're proud of them, that you appreciate the things that they do. You like notice it. You say thank you for those things. Those are sort of what they are longing for. And if you can, for the guy and the girl, if you can, for the guy, do what I just said, right? Like affirm them in those areas. And if the girl, if you can spend extra effort talking about how special they are and those things that you love about them and the ways that you see their friends appreciate them, and you see what a good friend they are to others and how kind they are. And yeah, it may be hard right now when your friend group is kind of being stupid, but I promise you, you know, after high school, you're going to find great friends or whatever it is, right? If you will do both of those things on either side, right, the guy, girl side, and you put some effort into it off, you know, not at the moment that the disrespect and the attitude is happening, but just day to day, then you'll start to see those attitudes less often because they're being built up in a very fundamental way where even if that raw nerve is hit, it doesn't have necessarily the same explosive kind of impact. So that's a what you might call kind of a preventative strategy. So there's two ways of looking at this. One is preventative, and then what do you do in the moment in the reacting to what's going on? So what I just said is the preventative side. How do we react in the moment? Listen, all of us know there's no one right, like magic answer, right? The key that we found and that we actually heard from the kids themselves, because we obviously asked this question, is for the parent to recognize that they are responding to the inner kid, not the outer one that's being obnoxious.
Wow, that's good. Yeah.
Right now. And if we can do that, and every parent should be able to do that because we're the ones who are the grown-ups and we're the ones who have greater self-discipline. Does it always work that way? But if we can think of it as, wow, this is part of the job that we've been given as a parent of reacting with self-discipline and reacting with calmness and saying, look, we have, and in a very calm voice saying, you know, look, you know that what you just said, that disrespect, that's not appropriate, in a very calm, you know, way. But can we talk about what's going on, honey? Right? Did something funky happen at school today? And recognize that, yeah, you can deal with discipline. There could be consequences. There could be whatever. But the much more important thing for you as a parent is what is going on in the heart of my child? Like that is the first and foremost thing that needs to be dealt with. And like I said, if we will start having slightly more of that focus, hopefully in most cases, not all, but in most cases, we'll start to see the attitude less often.
That question of what is happening on the inside in my child's heart, I think is transformative. And again, I think we see this when our kids are toddlers too. We have to have the emotional regulation because our kiddos don't. And I think there's still that element. I mean, their brains aren't fully developed until they're, what, 24, 25? So they're still experiencing some toddler-esque, and let's be honest, some adults still experience such things. But like for adults, we need to know we are the regulators. We create that atmosphere. We get to practice that discipline of self-control. And so for you to say, take a moment and think, what is going on in the inner heart of my kid? I think that's so powerful.
It's transformative. Again, in most cases, not 100% of them, right? But in most cases, it is. And one of the other things that I always tell parents to think about as a tool, this is actually one of our other findings, if you don't mind me tying over into one of the other findings, because it really ties directly to often why we will hear from our kids starting at like pretty early ages, like 9, 10 years old, you'll start to hear this, you're just not listening to me, right?
That's one of my favorite ones as well. My kids say all the time, it's like, wait, what?
And I'm like, I've been listening to you for 10 minutes.
What are you talking about?
And it turns out that what that actually means is something that many of us as moms should be ashamed of ourselves for thinking, because for not thinking, I should say, because many of us have said this to our husbands, because it pairs with the exact same thing that we tell our husband. I don't want you to fix it. I just want you to listen. And our husbands are like, what are you talking about? I've been listening for 10 minutes. Okay. So here is what this means, okay? And we found this in both the studies about the teenagers and the studies about women. So adult men are the only group that this does not necessarily, for most men, apply to quite the same way. But what it basically means is, I want you to listen to my feelings.
Ooh, yes.
Not to the problem. Not to the technicalities of whatever. I want you to listen to my feelings.
Yeah,
and
good.
So think of our teenagers. As we consulted when we were doing the research, one of the things that we do actually in all of our studies is every now and then we see data and we just see stuff coming in that we're like, I do not understand. I've heard this 137 times and I don't know what's going on, right? And so we often will consult with a specialist about, like, I'm seeing this like thing. What does this mean? And so one of the specialists we consulted with for parents only for this particular book and research project was an adolescent psychotherapist. And so we're like, what is it that's happening? And this, the way that she described, she gave us a word picture that I thought was perfect. And she said, think of your teenager's inner emotions. And this is actually, this starts in the tween years. This is not just the teenager years. This actually starts a couple years before. She said, picture your teenager's emotions as being, you know, those kind of, you have the big rubber bands.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, when you twist a rubber band and you twist it and you twist it and you twist it and you keep twisting it, it actually starts to get tight and kinked up and like this giant ball of tightness. And she said, picture that as being your teenager's emotions. And there's all sorts of, we don't have time to get into it, but there's all sorts of actually neuroscientific reasons for this. The neurobiology of the development of the brain is fascinating.
Oh, it is. I agree.
Oh my goodness, it's just so interesting. And so our kids are basically trying to figure out how to navigate this giant twisted ball of emotions all the time. And boys and girls. And so because it is part of the brain development, et cetera. And so that sense of, you're just not listening to me, is basically saying, I need to unload these emotions somehow. I need to unpack these emotions with you. And so, for example, my teacher embarrassed me in front of the whole class. Mr. Johnson is so mean, you know, and he gave me a bad grade on that test that I studied so hard for, and I thought I did pretty well. And they're so upset. And us as a mom, what is Mr. Johnson's phone number?
Oh, yeah. Going to mama bear mode. Absolutely.
Yes. I'm like, and that's when you hear, you're just not listening to me. And so what we have to do is actually the same thing that we tell the men in the For Men Only book about their wives, is we have to ignore the problem for a minute. Like, literally ignore the problem. And instead, it's almost like you have to, you're used to filtering out all those crazy emotions with the kids so you can focus in on the problem. It's almost like you have to do the reverse. For a minute, filter out the problem and focus in on all those jangling, tight, intense emotions and be like, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. Did you feel like people were kind of laughing at you when Mr. Johnson said that? You know, what did Jessica say? Did you feel like, you know, that this was something that was a result of that thing that happened a couple weeks ago? Like, tell me what, you know, how you're processing this. And you're basically pulling out those feelings. It's interesting because us as parents, and this is, by the way, a common thing with dads and daughters, because a dad will misunderstand that from a daughter as sometimes being a drama queen. right? Yeah. And this is all about the drama. And the dad's like, you know, and if you say pull out the feelings, it's like, are you kidding? That's like gasoline on a flame. That's like, it's going to make it worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what we found is actually when you focus on the feelings instead of the problem for a minute, it's not gasoline on a flame. It's more like you're drawing poison out of a wound.
Yeah,
you're
what a good
paradigm
shift.
Pulling it out of them. You're pulling it out of them. You're asking them about those feelings. Boys and girls, by the way, statistically, we're almost exactly equal on this. And so what happens is as that poison leaves and as they get those feelings out and they process them, you start to see that jangling tight rubber band kind of relax and it's untwisting the other way and it becomes softer and it's less reactive. And then at some point, they usually get to the point where it's like, you know, do you feel a little bit better now that we've talked this through? Yeah, I think maybe I'm being not all that fair to Mr. Johnson, actually, or whatever, or I only have another few months of school, so whatever. Do you want to talk about a solution? Like, do you want to talk about how you should approach him in class tomorrow? No, I got it. Thanks. Or maybe they say, yeah, I would. But you, that same exact question 10 minutes ago would have been met with, you're not listening to me.
That's right. Yep.
And that's
yep.
the reason. So tie this to the attitude thing. This is an example, listening to the feelings for both boys and girls and kind of having that affirming voice rather than, well, you shouldn't feel that way. Or, hey, think about it differently. Put on the cheery hat and, you know, everybody knows you're great at calculus. Like, who cares what Mr. Johnson says? I get that. That's my personality. I want to try to talk them out of being upset. And yet, if we can enter into that with them for a little bit and pull out those feelings, that is another thing that is affirming in those ways that they're insecure about. And so that's another thing that adds to that sense of building them up in those ways and hopefully preventing some of that attitude spiking.
Mm. So I hear you saying that you listen. Okay. So that's number one. You're actually
listen to
listening.
The feelings.
Yes.
Listen to the feelings.
But the goal is to hear what emotion they're experiencing.
Yes.
So in yes. It, would you say that even asking them questions of like, how does that make you feel? It's so open-ended. So it's not telling them you must
Absolutely.
Be mad. You must be sad. But it's more of like, so tell me more about how you feel. And then once you hear that, then even, but ask. I heard you say, ask the question, can I offer you a solution then? Instead of just
after.
Going straight into. Yes.
Once
after
you see
that.
Them relax, once you see the jangling tight rubber band look more normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which you can't always tell. And now, by the way, one of the things to know is that the male brain and the female brain are often wired a bit differently in processing things, where sometimes actually a guy will need to process things internally. Like they may not be able to explain how they're feeling until they've gone away and thought about it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Now, that's not every guy, just like not every girl wants to verbalize, right? Like my daughter actually was definitely an internal processor, not somebody who wanted to talk things through. You know, she wanted to go away and think about it. But usually by the time the jangling rubber band came home, she had been thinking about it.
Yeah.
And so we could have that conversation. But with my son, sometimes it would be like, he's like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. That was like his favorite answer. Well, buddy, do you want to maybe talk about this tomorrow before you leave for school? Okay. You know, and give his brain, you know, sometimes one of the things I found in the male brain is that sometimes about 12 hours, we'll give an overnight, we'll give the male brain time to process certain things. That's not a hard and fast rule, but that's a relatively common one that was found in some of the neuroscience. So, yeah.
So you received an overwhelming response from teens that asked what they wanted their parents to know the most about. What would you say that is?
Yeah. So let me explain this. At the end of the survey, so this was a nationally representative survey of teenagers. And at the end, we gave them a blank space. We'd had all these multiple choice questions. And let me tell you, they were really honest.
Which I so appreciate. That's awesome.
I did too, about their feelings, and I can't believe they always do whatever. Like, and some of what they said is kind of hard for parents to hear, candidly. Mm. And yet at the end, when we said, okay, enough with the multiple choice questions, if you knew that this was your last chance to say something to your parents, what would you want to tell them? Like, what's the most important thing you'd want them to know? I was expecting a laundry list of this and this and this and this frustration and that thing, because that was often what some of the other answers were. And instead, and I can't remember what the number was. It was like 96% or some huge, it was like this outpouring of the kids saying, I would want them to know how much I love them.
That's a mic drop. Holy cow. Wow.
I would want them to know how much I appreciate them as my parents. And I would want them to know how sorry I am that I've been such a brat.
Wow.
and when I grow up, I want a parent just like them.
Oh, man.
It's hard for me to talk about it without getting emotional. It's like, you should have seen me. I'm looking at the spreadsheet and I'm bawling. Wow. As I was like looking at these answers, because we think our kids are constantly pushing back against us, and we just love them so much, and we're just trying to help them to thrive in life. And there's something in us that is like, you know, am I making any difference at all? And yeah, we all make mistakes. Like, all of us do. We do stupid things. We don't always handle things right. And yet, even with us being stupid sometimes, our kids adore us. And our kids want us to know that. And there were some sad examples where that wasn't the case, where things had gotten hard enough that they had pulled back emotionally. But like I said, it was like 96% or 98%. Like, it was a huge number where they just wanted to express that love and appreciation. So that was encouraging.
What a blessing too. Because like you said, like, this is... our kids mean so much to us, and everything that we do, majority of us, we do out of love and concern and desire for health for them. And so we're not always the good guy, right? We're not always going to be the friend in that role until they get older as a young adult. But to know that they appreciate that they love us, oh gosh, that's great. I'm taking that on as an affirmation.
There you go.
Myself. Absolutely. So thank you. Gosh, well, this has been such a lovely conversation. And again, I highly recommend that everyone check out this book. I think it's going to be an amazing book for all those that have kids, not even just teenagers, but kids in general. But I would love for them to know how they get a hold of you, how they get your resources, and, you know, and grow from there.
Oh, you're so kind. Yeah. So the easiest way to, if you're interested in For Parents Only or any of the other resources, you just want to understand the research, for example, Shaunti.com is my website, and that's Shaunti.com. And it'll help you sort of go, okay, this is research-based, or here are some other things that, you know, there are these other teenage books or whatever, in order to be able to start exploring. But I just want to encourage every parent to sort of recognize you are doing what you need to do. Like, this is sometimes a hard road, and I just want to encourage everybody to sort of say, it's worth it. The kids get it. We'll get through this.
Wow. Well, I will take that affirmation. Again, you and I talked offline about how I'm experiencing this every night. Last night we had these conversations. So it is. It's worth it, putting in the work and loving our kids well, just so they can go out and be healthy adults. So thank you so much for joining me, Shaunti.
Absolutely.
So I'm certain that you enjoyed my conversation with Shaunti. And so you have your own takeaways. These are the things that really stood out to me. And I want you to be able to use them, implement them now, because I think they're really impactful for our relationship with our teenagers and things that we can actually start implementing with our littles. Some of these conversations or behaviors can be really instrumental in making change happen, as well as developing maturity. So first one, attitude. We all have teenagers in our life, whether they come home from school or a sporting event, or maybe they get a text from a friend and it just sets them off. We start noticing that they're sullen or that they're frustrated, easily irritable, right? I'm speaking to those that have teens. You know exactly what I'm talking about. For us as adults, we get the opportunity to take a step back and say, what is going on inside the heart of my child? We have to remember that what we're seeing is just an outside reflection of what's going on the inside. Now, Shante was able to point out two different things for the different genders that maybe manifest in different ways. So for instance, for boys, they're struggling with potentially the pain point of, am I able? This is interesting because a lot of their life is all about performance-based activities. And so if they're constantly being surrounded by things that they're struggling in, failing in, they're going to come back into our own home, which is a safety place. She did point that out. We are supposed to have a safe place for our kids to experience the love, grace, as well as just relationship with them. That if they are unable to feel good about themselves or perform well outside the home, that's going to cause some tension in who they are. So for them, when they're acting out, maybe one of our first questions can be to inside ourselves. She also mentioned maybe not discussing these on the front end, but instead recognizing that our kids might be just struggling with performance, that they may not feel good enough. So that can help us then have more grace for them. For the girls, however, her suggestion, the pain point that they might be struggling with is, am I lovable? She delineated between not how many friends do you have? Do you have people that love you? Instead, they're struggling with this intrinsic desire to know, am I worth loving? Ooh, that's a big one, right? How do we address that in our girls? Well, we walk alongside them. She gave some examples of saying things like, I love you dearly. Look how special you are. Or I love the way that you are a friend to others. I love the way that you do this. That's affirming who they are and the fact that they are special to you. So those are some of the conversations that we can have with our kids, even starting now. We implement that in our daily lives. But the number one thing that Shanti said is that the attitude that we are getting from our kids usually is indicative that they're struggling with a pain point that we get an opportunity to lean into. Next takeaway. Have you ever heard your kids say this? I know I certainly have. Mom, you're not listening to me. So I just spent the last 30 minutes listening to my child vent. How am I not listening to them? The difference is that they don't feel seen or known. Shanti talks a lot about how we need to lean into the emotion that our kids are sharing with us. So they might be struggling with a dramatic incident with their friendships, but instead of leaning into creating a solution for our kids, which we want to help them, we want to make sure that their lives go smoothly, Shanti is saying instead, just lean into the emotion. Ask questions about what they're experiencing emotionally. So she said, ignore the problem that you're aware of. You hear there's a conflict, forget the conflict. Instead, lean into how the conflict is affecting them emotionally. So that is a big step that we can start implementing even today with our kids. And the best part is once we lean into the emotion with our kids and what they're experiencing, we get to the end of that conversation and we can ask the question of, well, how are you feeling now? Do you feel a little bit better? And if they are, we get to ask, can I help you come up with a solution? So what are you going to do tomorrow that's going to make it different? Can I offer a suggestion? And sometimes they're going to reject our suggestions. And that's okay too, because, you know, in time, hopefully they'll come back to that. But in this case, that builds a connection because they're already feeling that their vulnerability was met with acceptance and love. And that is powerful in our connection with kids. And a side note with boys, particularly, I found quite interesting is sometimes it takes boys, and this could be girls, internal processors in general, it can take up to 12 hours for them to process. So you might need to take a step back if they're not able to share what the tension or conflict is that they're experiencing. Just say, hey, maybe we can talk about it tomorrow. And then make sure that you check in and ask them again in 12 hours to see, hey, are you ready to talk about that now? The last one, and this one touched my heart so deeply, is that our kids want us to know that they love us, that they appreciate us. I recently had this experience with my own daughter. She texted me, she was with her friends, and she said her friends were venting about their parents and how they were complaining about how their parents weren't good or frustrating or whatever. And she goes, Mom, and I realize I don't have anything to complain, you know, about you. We're close and we're doing really well right now. Now, side note, that probably wasn't the same situation like a month previous. So I will take it in the moment when she gave it. And I was so excited to hear that right now we're great. But for her to reach out to me and say that she loved me and that we're in a really good place, that touched my heart in such a beautiful way. And so for those of you who are like, all I do is try to love my kids and they're not receiving it, or they're always thinking I'm coming down on them. Take a step back. Take a step back and say, I know my kids love me. They may not know how to share it. They may not know how to show it, but they do adore you. And that hopefully can add some grace to those interactions that you have in the future. So those are my takeaways from today. Again, please check out Shandi's information. She has some great resources that I know is going to be really beneficial for you and your household. And thanks, listeners, for joining me today on my podcast. We have a lot of exciting interviews coming up. So be sure to stay tuned for next time on next edition of Embracing Your Season.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Embracing Your Season with Paige Klingenpiel. Check out her latest resources and episodes on her website at paigeklingenpiel.com. That's Paige, P-A-I-G-E, Klingenpiel, C-L-I-N-G-E-N-P-E-E-L.com. Also, be sure to follow Paige on all her social media pages, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks again for joining us. Be sure to tune in next week for another edition of Embracing Your Season, Raising Littles and Understanding Teens. This program is sponsored by Homeward. Find out more at homeward.com.
Hi, this is Jim Burns, president of Homeward, and we have four values at Homeward: strong marriages, confident parents, empowered kids, and healthy leaders. Our mission? Helping families succeed. Well, just like Paige's podcast, we assist parents in relevant and practical ways, and we do it while deepening your understanding of these changing times. I hope you'll let us come alongside you to strengthen your marriage, your parenting skills, and even your personal life. Homeward is the largest provider of parenting seminars in the United States, and we'd love to come to your church. And if you'd like to learn more, you can visit our website at homeward.com. That's Homeward, W-O-R-D.com. That's the place where you can also sign up for free blogs, our weekly culture brief, check out our YouTube channel, and many more resources to bring encouragement and inspiration. Homeward, helping families succeed. Visit us at homeward.com.